Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, the second time in 30 minutes. Sorry, guys. Forgot to hit the record button again.
Hopefully, we might be even more exciting? Question mark?
It's usually better the second time around. So if it kind of dies the 30-minute mark, it's because that was all the repeat stuff, and then we had to go start fresh. But all right, today, we're diving into one of the most tragic of all the traitor legions, the World Eaters.
What was Brad's first army ever put on the board in
World
40K?
Eaters.
And I've got some opinions on them. One, John and I are going to have some differing views on the World Eaters, especially some of their main characters.
Yeah.
Chaotic Evil, the Legion, maybe. Chaotic Good, starting with their Primarch.
They were never good.
No, the Primarch.
They were never good.
No, they were
also,
always
good. His gene seed sucks. We're doing this. We're getting into it a little bit, but I think Angron, we're going to spend a lot of time on Angron today. I have a lot of opinions on Angron, but
you're like the gene seed. You're like, the milk is gone bad.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So we put his gene seed in people. What happened? They became frothing murderers. Oh,
well,
I don't think chaotic good.
Did they become, or we'll talk about where they got them at first.
Yeah, we will. Fair enough. But I just might point out like Angron's first move was to murder a bunch of, it was Eldar, but still we'll get into that. All right. Sorry, guys. A lot of like, hey, here's what's coming today. So before we begin, as always, 40K Lorecast is a weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please continue to follow the cast and comment on it. It does help our algorithm a lot. It's pushed us out. We're currently the number one cast on Warhammer, actually globally overall. And that's not, I mean, I'd love to take a lot of credit for it, but it's because you guys are commenting and liking on it, and Spotify and iTunes keep saying, yeah, I'll keep pushing this thing. Additionally, if you like the cast, want to hear more about it, we now have a YouTube page. You can find a link in the notes to it. It's called the 40K Lorecast. There you're going to find old versions of the cast that have been converted to with imagery and subtitles, so you can see what it was we were saying. We were mumbling into the microphone.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Even AI doesn't know what we're saying.
Oh, no, I manually do it all. Believe me, I have to go back through and listen to them and type in the subtitles. It's a lot of fun being like, what the hell were we saying there? And I have to listen two or three times and go, that's what that word was. But there's also our live Q&A sessions are in there. Our show now, The History of 40K, is over there, which you guys have been getting links to on this. And also, Brad's newest show coming out, Two Old Men and Their Handler, which will be a more of a competitive-focused show on the Warhammer 40K universe. Additionally, in our show notes is linked to our Patreon. Massive thank you to everyone who's contributed to the Patreon over the last couple of years. It really has broadened us out massively. That YouTube channel would not exist. The microphones we're recording on today, all of the stuff that we're doing, it's thanks to Patreon. And we've changed it up a little bit now. So now for $4.99, you can get the show ad-free. So you don't have to listen to the ads. Or if you're in the Cayman Islands because you're afraid of taxes, it's only $4.16 Cayman Island dollars. I don't know. You know, or you're in the, yeah. Oh, no, or you're there on vacation, whatever reason you want to call it. But I think we know why you're in the Cayman Islands and wanting to pay your Patreon in Cayman Island dollars. Do you, man? All right. Lastly, we do have a Discord, as you are all well aware. Over 9,000 people in it at time of recording, which probably could be even more of a time of listening. It's a wonderful place. I cannot encourage you guys to come in there anymore. We don't charge for it. We make no money off of it, too. I just like having a place that's great for people to come into, learn about Warhammer, interact with people around Warhammer. It's just, that's something that just gives me a lot of joy as a parent, candidly, that having a place that I could, that my kid's too young to do it now, but could go to and learn about Warhammer, not just get flamed for asking a dumb question. Big thank you to the moderators there, Doc, Snaz, Cthulhu, Solarzia, Steve, Maestro, Query, Noogles, Gersbeck, Iron Magos, and Curl. You guys are doing an incredible job of keeping it organized, keeping it easy to follow. And also, I think a big benefit is bot free. One big thing that involved it, for those who don't know, with Discords, when you hit 9,000 people, it's 9,000 actual people, not 500 people and 8,500 bots. But with that, let's get into the 12th Legion again. The world leaders, originally known as the 12th Legion, what makes them different from their other legions, though, and even their traitor brethren, is that much of their history is redacted from Imperial records. Not because they turned traitor, because we don't have this for any other legions, like Death Guard, Thousand Sons, it's not redacted. These guys got redacted before they went traitor, because they were that messed up of a legion.
Quit killing everyone.
Yeah.
You're like, we invaded the fortress. You're like, and I'm now in the hospital killing people. Why are you there? Stop. Okay, we can't let anybody know that happened.
I think you can only follow down a few times. Like, why is it every single building in every settlement in the world years do used red paint all over the walls? Oh, God, that's not red paint. Oh. So, 12th Legion. Formed during the Unification Wars like any other legion. However, they saw very little combat during this time, at least according to Imperial records. What's more interesting about this time for them is how they were formed. So as the Emperor is conquering the Techno-Barbarian tribes, he's assimilating them into his own forces. And part of this assimilation, for whatever reason, was a psychometric test, which implies that the Emperor has an HR department, which I now need to do a cast on. I want to do a bunch of time on the Emperor's HR department.
Who's in charge of the Emperor's HR department? Malkador, Valdor, and the Emperor?
It's worth it. No, it's not who's in charge. That's who the HR department has to report to. So people complain into the HR department, and then HR has to go meet with Malkador or Valdor about something like, I don't know, my boss is hammering nails into my skull. And Malkador, and then looking at Malkador and Valdor saying, what should I do about that? And I'm assuming their response is going to be murder the person complaining. Yeah.
And again, we have to look at, okay, ready? We're going to take these groups and separate them by their scores. So you've got, hey, these guys are really good. We're going to go into where they came from. The nobility for Emperor's Children, the Iron Hands were durable techno waste guys. Imperial Fists were from the major cities, basically those legions that can operate. One of the things that the Imperial Fists do really well, we talked about it, was operate inside cities and civilization and not screw everything up. Or you have the other pile of, hey, are you wildly unstable and like killing people? And that was a pile that you think would be like, we're not going to use these people. And then you went, nah, we're going to make an entire legion out of these people.
Yeah, I'm going to reference a very good movie, Young Frankenstein, when Igor is looking for the brains and it's abnormal, do not use, because Abby normal.
Yeah.
And that's what this was. There's a whole pile of, these people are just horrifying and all they want to do is murder and kill. Okay, cool. They're going to go over to Section 4, and we're going to make a legion out of them. What's interesting is, to Brad's points, every other legion, well, not every, but a bunch of the legions were at least, there was some ethnic grouping around them. either they were nobility, they came from this certain sector, whatever it was. The world leaders came from everywhere. And it was like, yeah, this person just likes murder, but also more importantly, doesn't do subtle murder. Because we have a different group for subtle murder. If you're more like, I'm really good at hiding behind a doorway, jumping out and getting somebody, I got you a legion for that. I need the person who runs straight at them with a sharp stick and goes, I'm going to poke everyone's eye out.
I would go farther than that, though, because you can get the person that runs straight at them heroically in combat. These were, I will kill everyone around me in combat.
Yeah, that's true. I'm also, yeah, I'm going to run over there. I'm going to stab with a stick. Then I'm going to take his body and stab other people with his body. They're a little bit loopy.
If they had some problems, again, oh no, they turned to chaos. I can't believe it. What?
Yeah, like, they started in chaos. The only story that's not redacted from this era is the deployment against the group of people called the Saafric.
What is it again, John?
Saafrics. Saafric. Whatever that comes out to. There's no details about the engagement or anything. All that is known is that the 12th Legion was made as a spearhead for the assault. They pierced the enemy fortification and killed everyone there. They don't say the defenders.
No.
It's quite likely they slaughtered the entire population once they got in there.
Yeah.
And I bring that up. I said that.
It just is.
Yeah, because they didn't see any more action. Not only did they not see any more action in the Unification Wars, right after the Unification Wars, the Emperor goes to conquer Seoul. He sends every legion out to different parts of Seoul to either conquer or bring something or convince someone to be on their side. Nope. The 12th Legion did not get sent anywhere.
They were watching sensitivity training at home.
Yes. Which, by the way, I don't know what sensitivity video they were sent. It was the wrong one.
They got worse, like wildly worse.
Yeah. They're going to send them, hey, here's your sensitivity training. And some of them sent them like blood sport. And they were like, all right, this is awesome. We can do this, which is basically what they did do, by the way. During this entire period of time, the 12th Legion sat in their ships and trained. And they did train on, here's how you do siege warfare. Here's how you do these things. And I think every one of those, every time that they brought up the, here's how you use a tank, you heard an entire chorus of boo coming out of the entire
group. I feel the schedule was morning is everything else and afternoon and evening is punchy punchy time because they were focused on melee combat.
That's really all they wanted to do. Eventually, though, they do start getting deployed. And the Emperor discovers pretty quickly he's created a monstrosity. Not an abomination, because an abomination is a failure. A monstrosity. This is a monster that when he unleashes it, does horrible, horrible things. And he was overjoyed with this. To the point where he actually, he names them.
Sorry.
His warhounds.
But it's just, it cracks me up because the Emperor is such a douche sometimes. Because their whole existence right now is to put other people in line, not the place they're on, but to actually, you want to know what'll happen if we show up?
Eh? Yeah. The Emperor starts using the 12th Legion like an attack dog. It's on the leash, barking and snarling as a threat of, if I let go of this leash, you're not going to like what happens next. And the irony is that usually we talk about a dog on a leash barking and snarling. It barks worse than its bite. The best part of the 12th Legion was the bark. That was a gentle tickle compared to what would happen if they were released. But there was a problem with that. And the problem is that when released, they would overkill. So they actually did a second founding. And this actually might be where Gilliman got his original idea from, where they broke the Legion up down to less than 10,000 per. They didn't call them chapters, but I'm going to call them chapters because it makes my life easier, of 12th Legion. They were then spread across and they were used in conjunction with the other legions. Again, you couldn't deploy the world eaters with anyone else as a full legion because they're just going to go kill everything. There's really no purpose to this. But what they would do is they'd send them out with Thousand Sons, Imperial Fist, Ultramarines, and just say, look, if you guys were if they're into a problem where there's a defender who's just a little bit too dug in, cool. Fire some of these drop pods down there. They'll dig them out. And actually, I mean, that's a good thing we should probably spend some time on is how the emperor's legions were set up, because the 12th legion really were quite unique. You know, the majority of the 20 legions fell into what I would call traditional warfare, which is siege warfare, fortification warfare, lightning strikes, armored assaults. That's what, I mean, there's actually a good amount of overlap in most legions for that. There's a few extras between the Raven Guard, Night Lords, and Alpha Legion that are what I would call psychologic warfare. The Alpha Legion are masters of infiltrating and actually causing rebellion. So if you're for example, let's say you're running a system or even a planet, and the Emperor comes and says, you know, well, wouldn't be the Emperor, but someone comes to you and says, we want you to join the Imperium. Your citizenry might be on team, yeah, it'd be cool to join them, but you're on team, I don't want to go broke, so I'm going to say no. All of a sudden, some of your best friends end up murdered in the night, and you realize, oh, I should probably say yes. That's Alpha Legion.
Yep.
The next one is Raven Guard, who are more designed to make you realize your military is ineffective, because what they would do is, out of nowhere, they just lightning strike your military, and your military would be like, have sensors.
Yeah. I love the Raven Guard for this, though, because they wouldn't crush their military. They would just lightning strike them and take off.
Yeah.
I mean, the Raven Guard suffered until they suffered all, very few casualties in their engagements, because a lot of times they wanted that military to be there after they were conquered, because that became the planetary defense force and it helped out.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you guys know, like, I kickbox for a while. I think of the Raven Guards having this really fast, nasty jab. But just that you just throw out tips to say, hey, by the way, this is how hard I could hit you if I wanted to. Maybe you don't try to fight us because you're going to lose terribly. And what would happen is the military would go to the planetary leader and say, yeah, we're done, guys. Let's go join this Imperium thing. The last two I'm going to spend some time on, and the difference between them and the 12th Legion, is the Night Lords. And then we're going to get to the Dark Angels in a second.
And these guys are so much different, because I think a lot of people think that just because they are terror, both of them could be considered terror troops, but they don't work the same way. It's not even close.
No. What the Night Lords do is, again, Night Lords would deploy to a planet where you'd conquered part of it, or maybe a system where you've conquered one planet, and they would do horrible things there. They are going to flay people alive. They are going to do terrifying things there. But the purpose of the Night Lords was to sit there and say to the populace, you don't want to resist me. If you resist me, when I get there, I conquer you, I will do this.
They're trying to pacify the populace. Yeah,
exactly.
And why that's has wildly different than the 12th Legion is because they weren't there to pacify anybody.
Yeah. There is no populace. That's the difference. The Night Lords, the Night Lords are trying to pacify the remaining populace. The 12th Legion, they're is no populace. The 12th Legion, when they were deployed in an exterminata style. They are going to wipe out everyone, everything. Every being dies. Almost all your buildings are going to be destroyed. That is what they did when they went somewhere. Because the idea of the 12th Legion is that they would use them to make an example of what resistance to the Imperium is. And the difference between that and the Dark Angels, the First Legion we've covered before, is significant. Both the First Legion and the 12th Legion were used to exterminate a planet. They would both leave nothing left. But the First Legion did it in secret. The First Legion would go out and they would go, the Emperor would, it'd be the Emperor, maybe Malkador, would send them somewhere where there's a Xenos that they don't want anyone knowing about, possibly Chaos Taint, and they would be sent there and they would wipe it completely. And later, some settlers would arrive on a planet and go, wow, this place is really nice. Why has no one settled it before? And everyone would go, no idea.
12th Legion, exactly the opposite. You wanted everybody to know.
The 12th Legion, you would arrive on the planet and there'd be a giant pile of skulls and bodies from the prior inhabitants to make sure everyone understands, when we say comply, we mean comply. And they embrace this pretty hard, by the way, as a legion. They take a lot of pride in not just conquering their foes, but doing it in a way that instills fear, not just in other planets, but even other legions didn't like being around them. Lord knows the guard and the imperial, sorry, at this point, the imperial military didn't want anything to do with the 12th Legion.
Yeah, because if you fought anywhere near him, you were going to get killed.
Yeah. And where the Emperor starts using the 12th Legion for is two areas. First is people who are resisting too hard, the compliance, where you go to the system and they say, yeah, I'm not joining you. And the 12th Legion would just attack one planet. And whoever's running the system would get to see, oh, they just slaughtered every single being on that. Maybe we should take the Emperor's offer up, take a second shot. But the bigger one they were used for was actually Imperial compliance. Because you show up with your Space Marine legions and say to a system, you're going to be part of the Imperium now or else. A lot of them will say, yeah, yeah, sure. They join. And then when all that military leaves, they're like, yeah, we're not paying that tax. There's just, that's not happening, right?
However, the Imperial tithe is a real, you can do a lot of things. If you are a governor, a planetary or system governor, mm-hmm. one thing that you can't do is not pay your tithe.
Yeah. And what would happen is if he didn't pay the tithe, it's quite possible a bunch of 12th Legion ships would appear in orbit. And as a member of the Imperium, you know what that means. And you've got a minute to decide, I think I should start paying the tax. I should pay all the prior, all the back taxes and any penalties therein. Because, nope. Because otherwise, they could deploy and new settlers will arrive on the planet, hopefully carrying a whole lot of club soda because there's going to be some stains in the furniture.
This is so hard to get out.
Yeah, it's like just really scrubbing. Like, can you guys print me a new one? Is there an STC for leather couch? I'm just throwing it out there because this thing's wrecked.
But luckily, they were about to meet their Primarch.
Yeah.
And things are going to get so much better, right?
Oh, God. I mean, it is funny because most of the legions, when you hear about, they were lost and then they found the Primarch and it recentered them. By the way, that includes ones who went to Traitor. Not these ones. These ones actually were doing, the 12th Legion was doing great. And then Angron came in and they just kept doing it. It just was like, yeah, we're going to do the exact same thing. But let's talk about Angron. Angron's tricky. Quick recap, everybody. Angron, for those, if this is your first time listening to us and or any of this stuff, every Primarch was created by the Emperor using a combination of his genetic material, Terran genetic material, and a whole lot of warp power. Really, it was just a sausage. It's a warp sausage. It's a bunch of warp wrapped up in a human. That's how I like to look at the Primarchs. And we'll get to there shortly, but the creation of Angron is a bit more complicated to me because it's hard to discern what the Emperor was trying to create there.
He's an empath. He was legitimately an empath, mm-hmm. was his superpower. Every Primarch has their signature superpower. Angron's, before all the stuff happened to him, was he's an empath.
Yeah, my theory on that. We'll get there in a second. My theory on this, we'll get there. Give me a minute. So all the Primarchs got teleported out of their gestation pods to random planets throughout the galaxy. And each of the planet was meant to tempt the Primarch into falling into chaos by placing them in a setting that would encourage rebellion against the Emperor and thereby like embracing the dark powers. It was Star Wars. And it just is a rip off Star Wars. They wanted all the Primarchs to turn on the Imperial Senate so they could save Padme. That was basically how this was written. Some of the planets were a bit more subtle. Like Ultramar is an interesting one to me because Ultramar was actually meant to tempt Gilliman into being the facets of leadership because he could see himself as the greatest leader in the entire galaxy. Which the hope was then he would look at the Emperor as a less capable leader and would therefore overthrow him.
And that didn't work at all.
Not at all, but it's a better, it's a shot. Whereas Mortarion was on Nusaria, where it was like, again, hey, everyone who's in charge and is a psyker is a horrible person. You should murder them all. To be fair, Lorgar is probably the most subtle because Lorgar was just put somewhere where he would naturally learn about chaos.
It wasn't even that subtle. They worship the gods of chaos on his planet.
I'm saying, but it was a more subtle thing of like when the Emperor comes, he's, yeah, I actually know about the greatest secret that you are, that you have. But it wasn't like they were trying to make him overthrow the Emperor, probably because he was too weak to do it. But all that being said, Nusaria was not subtle.
Ew.
Ooh, okay, so Nusaria is a true world of nightmares. This is as bad as it can be without having demons or Dark Eldar running around, although I have a theory on that second part, is so bad that after the Emperor found Angron, he had its location and name purged from Imperial records. It's entirely possible that Nusaria never existed. In fact, this kind of becomes a fun question of if what is the real story here? Because it could be this is more of a fan fiction thing, but was Angron actually born on Terra? Did all of this stuff happen in like a dark room? And it's always a volcano because it's the freaking GW,
right? Dr. Evil?
But yeah, is that piece of, did Nusaria actually exist? I know, yeah, later they go there, but do they? This becomes it but let's go with what Nusaria is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a technologically advanced world where all the power and wealth are concentrated within a wealthy set of oligarchs. And the rest of the population is just in abject poverty. And they were ruled with just extreme force. Brutalizing. Yeah,
extreme force is one thing. They were doing it as sport, though. Because they had they didn't treat anybody, besides the oligarchs, they just treated everybody else as nothing, playthings, like whatever.
We're workers, though. Because this isn't like Barbarous, where the leaders are super-powered psyker necromancers who actually can rule over it. These were actually humans. This was a human colony. And so what they had was, they had a military and they were just massively oppressive down. But what they did to, quotes, pacify the population was they took a page out of ancient Rome and actually, if I'm being honest, modern society, and they just added sports. Lots and lots of sports. But the sports are just murder sport. It was all gladiatorial combat. They built coliseums. They were just like ancient Rome. You had one main coliseum at the capital and a bunch of small ones all over the place but they were constantly having really brutal levels of combat. And I'll point out that if you actually read more, the more you read about Nusaria, the more it sounds like Kamara. And there is because Kamara existed at this point, don't forget, because Kamara predates all this. I'm just saying it's possible. Is the other piece here. Because again, we don't know what or where Nusaria is. And there's going to be more evidence.
I'll give you this because he was the only Primarch that wasn't successful in what he did. Because this was supposed to be bread and circuses, ancient Rome. They took care of the populace by just giving them these huge events. Also, they were taking anybody that could possibly rise against them and making them gladiators.
Yeah. So Angron, as a small child, lands on this random mountain on Nusaria. And there's a local slaver who's wandering around looking for people to abduct, and he comes upon Angron. But what he comes upon is not just a child. It's a small child. It's hard to figure out how big Angron was at this point. Basically lying unconscious, surrounded by a pool of blood of dead Xenos, which we learn later is a book called The Slave of Nusaria. They were Eldar. A bunch of Eldar, that the theory is that the Eldar knew what Angron could become and actually went to go murder it. And then, yeah, Brent and I both love Eldar, but Aspect Warriors are no match for a baby Primarch.
I'm just assuming they sent Dire Avengers or something.
Yeah, you could have said anything. I'm sorry. You're not going to. There are no Aspect Warriors who are going to take out a Primarch. In the game, they are. It's easy. I've done it numerous times. on the tabletop, it's nothing. I mean, I say that people who are currently playing Warhammer with the Lion are like, I got wrecked last week. He died in one turn. What are you talking about? But in theory.
This is why the origin of Angron makes me super angry, though, because he's this powerful Primarch, even as a child. But like random Ted the Slaver was able to instantly incapacitate him.
Yeah. And this is why I do have a theory. I actually do think Nusaria is in the Webway. I think Nusaria is I guess they were Dark Elder at this point. That's my weird, I'm wrong. Don't get me wrong. I know I'm wrong about this, but the stories make a bit more sense that way. If he's being captured, not by a human slaver who just, this guy just killed 15 Eldar, but I'll just put a pair of handcuffs on him and carry him off somewhere. No. Or this is a homunculus who actually was able to knock him unconscious and then take him back to the fighting pits. To Brad's point, Angron has a special power, and it is his empathy, sort of.
You know what? You will not poo on this. And also, we're about to use a movie comparison, and you will not poo on The Green Mile either, because that movie is magical.
Yeah, anyway. All right, so Angron's powers is the power of, I don't know the name of the character, in The Green Mile. I guess it won an Oscar, so it's probably a good movie, but it's if you never see it, you'll be fine. That's more what I'm getting at.
You know what? We're going to get hate for that because you're poo-pooing in a great movie.
No, it's a good movie. What I'm saying is it's not like you have to have seen it. Like, I am more upset if you haven't seen the movie Airplane than if you haven't seen Green Mile. That's all. That's all I'm saying. All right.
All right.
You know, I think that's fair. Like, one of them,
I can get on board with that.
Yeah. One of them's sad. The other one's not. All right.
There is a bit really sad.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Yeah, but Angron's superpower is actually he can literally, like via mental transference, take on other people's pain. He's able to, the idea is that he can absorb from you. He understands what's the worst thing for you, your worst feelings, your worst everything. He actually takes them onto himself and loads them onto himself, which may have overloaded him later in life. But that's his power. His other superpower is Angron can fight. And that's probably his real like superpower. We talk about it, but no, Angron is, because this is where my issue with is, I tend to lean more to the second one there, because he's supposed to be this like compassionate and loving leader, but the 12th Legion are made from his gene seed.
I really do think that he was supposed to be the person that was diplomating it up.
Why, when I insert his gene seed into a person, do they become the greatest murderer ever?
Because you keep inserting it into crazy people.
If I put compassion into a crazy person, shouldn't it middle them out a little bit? It just feels like we should be like, he should be taking the edge off, not sharpening it.
He understands what you're afraid of and murders you with it.
It becomes this weird little thing of GW. I don't know what GW is trying to do here, because if Angron's supposed to be this person who has got great empathy and great all understanding of the needs, desires, and fears of those around him, why is his legion this violent?
It goes into, well, the nails are going to be a real problem with that.
That's definitely a thing. That's definitely a thing. But let's go into Angron and what converts Angron over to being the worst thing ever. So Angron arrives in the main city of Nusaria, and they immediately throw him into the pit of fighters. And what they do is he's a small child, and they give him a sword. I actually don't even know. And he's standing on a ziggurat, which, Google it, and with a bunch of other combatants. All of a sudden, the ziggurat begins descending. And as it descends, there's a pool of acid all around it. And so the further it goes down, the less space there is to stand, therefore kill each other. And a crying Angron murders everyone until he's the only one standing there, like a couple years old at this point. At this point, the rulers of Nusaria say, yep, we like this pit fighter. And they name him. This is where he gets his name, Angron. Angron Thalkree.
Child of the mountain.
God, it's so lame. Because they found him on a mountain. So they named him Child of the Mountain. You know who else was found on the mountain? Cool. Most of the other people. That's my point. This is lazy. I'm sorry. Does Robote Gilliman mean Child of Logistics? No, it does not. Stop giving these people terrible names. But Angron's abilities as a warrior start getting fostered as he's growing. And he becomes the greatest gladiator in the history of Nusaria.
I mean, his story is Spartacus. It just goes.
That's what they're going to go to. When I say greatest warrior, I mean, it's more not like Fulgrim, because Fulgrim was this really like artistic warrior who could, he just cut your throat at a distance and parry blows. Angron beat his opponents to death. It didn't matter what you handed him, he would win it. Effectively, GW watched the original Gladiator, which came out in the year 2000, for the record, which does not make me feel good about myself, about how old I am. Gladiator came out in 2000. A lot of the Angron books came out in 2003 to 2006. Yeah. I'm just saying, I think we know where the idea came.
It bugs me that he keeps escaping. He's not allowed to continue to be free. Like, he gets caught and brought back.
Yeah.
How? Just how?
Yeah, so this is, again, one of the areas of Angron that's a little bit annoying. So Angron he's a Primarch. He doesn't really want to be caged. And as we said before, this is a planet, in theory, of humans. I still think it could be Dark Eldar, but they don't know how to cage a Primarch. So he keeps escaping. And every time he escapes, they catch him, which no explanation of really how that's functionally possible, but he keeps getting back. And the mistake that he realizes later is that he keeps doing it solo. And we'll get to that in a bit. At this moment, though, Angron's starting to get on the nerves of the leaders of Nusaria. Because not only is he escaping a lot, but he's not that well behaved when they put him inside the arena. Again, reference the movie Gladiator. Angron is put in gladiatorial combat to kill people, but he keeps sparing them. Not all of them, just the ones who fight really well. He spares their lives, even when the leaders of Nusaria don't want him to. And he slowly, again, I'm going to keep pointing out Gladiator, becomes more popular and more popular. So the populace begins to love him. And so now the leaders of Nusaria have a little bit of an issue. Their best fighter pit guy is getting pretty popular, and they need to bring him to heel. And butcher's nails.
Yeah, let's just say that the age of technology was a super cool time, but Some of the stuff that came out of that wasn't super great.
Yeah, when we discussed the age of technology, we've almost in all of our cast discussed it more as a positive. Incredible STCs, weaponry, technology, all this stuff. All things that are meant to uplift mankind. There was some other stuff, though. And one of them was the butcher's nails. Created for really an unknown purpose, although some recent books have hinted at the real purpose of them. And very long-lost technology. These things are metal rods of sort with electromagnetic power. They're implanted into your skull. Once they're in there, they actually will blind you to compassion and drive you to violence. Because what they do is a couple pieces.
One of the things is that they hurt you anytime you do anything compassion.
Yeah.
You suffer monstrous pain.
What it does is it basically makes your body stop producing serotonin. Serotonin is the chemical that makes you feel good. That's what, you know, your joy, it all comes out of serotonin. What it does is when your adrenaline spikes, your body will then make it. So what this in effect does is, unless you're really active and being aggressive and doing things, you are miserable, getting more miserable. It also will shut off some of your pain receptors. So it turns you into just naturally, it's more of a Pavlovian response. It drives you into being this just murder creation, because the only way you will feel any joy is through killing and through adrenaline. And if you don't kill, you feel sadness. But also as you're killing, that adrenaline is rushing through your system, you're also not feeling pain. And so it's not so much that it makes you a horrifying warrior. It's just you don't have a choice but to be one. And these things are, this is nightmare technology, simply put. I still think, Kamara, this doesn't sound like a creation of humanity. This is a homunculus creation.
I was just about to say, this is a coven thing for sure.
This is 100% something the coven would inject. And I still would argue maybe that's all just redacted history and Angron was actually on. Maybe he wasn't in the webway. Perhaps it was just one of the worlds that had been settled by the Eldar and it was outside of the webway. But this just has all the markings of Dark Eldar all over it. This level of manipulation, it's just, and then the fighting pits, just pointing it out. So
do we want to go into your least favorite parts of all of the Primarch stories?
What?
His mentor, his father figure.
Yeah, there's every time.
Your favorite.
Every time they have the Primarch, and here's my mentor, so fine. Angron has the, because of course, there's some older pit fighter named Onomaeus, by the way, past tense, who grew up in the pits and spent all his days fighting in the pits. And he really had a taking to Angron and wanted to make him and made him into a better warrior. And they were, of course, best friends. And as best buddies, they would slaughter anyone and everyone in the pit together. Anyway, this is, it's just lazy writing. That's why I get upset about this one. At one point, Angron is in the pit fighting next to his buddy Onomaeus, and they actually were fighting two Ogryn who'd had butcher's nails put in them. And at the end of the fight, they're victorious, and the rulers of Nusaria, in an effort to bring Angron to heel, tell Angron he now has to fight Onomaeus and to kill him. To which Angron gives them the old Stone Cold Steve Austin salute and walks away. That was enough. The Nusarians were like, that's it. We're done with this. We're going to now put the butcher's nails in. And the reason they hadn't done this before is Angron was a really good warrior. And when you put butcher's nails in someone, yes, they can still fight, but they become a little less capable. That's the best way to explain it.
They also will eventually die from them.
So. Yes. And so they didn't want to do it, but they did it. And so they shoved the butcher's nails in there. And effectively, he wakes up, and he wakes up, and Onomaeus is the only thing in the room with him, at which point he actually tears Onomaeus apart with his bare hands. After this, like, moment, the clarity kicks in. He sees what he's done. And Angron realizes that he has to leave. This is...
And he focuses his rage on the rulers. We're getting out of here.
Yeah. And he does... This is where we... Now we're going to start ripping... Instead of ripping off Gladiator, now we're going to rip off Spartacus. Because, you know, IP violations are fun. And Angron leads a full rebellion of the fighters within Nusaria into a... And they break out from the bottom, which probably wasn't that hard. If you're talking about basically, so all the best fighters in the entire city are concentrated in this one place. Yeah. What's surrounding them? Very squishy citizens. And so they do. So they break out and start, they of course, by the way, do slaughter the entire populace between them
and
the
exit.
Which is, but like, that's why we talk about, oh, Angron had a lot of compassion. When his fighters broke out, they murdered Ted, Eric, and Sarah on their way out the door.
He's got butcher's nails in by this point. Yes, but I'm saying he did. But the, one of the big things about this is they're dominating and they could have got the hell out of there. And instead, they just go into the mountains and chill. Why? Just like they know exactly where they are. This is such a terrible plan.
It's a weird thing because, yeah, exactly. The rulers of Nusaria, don't get Angron and his guys, they slaughter their way out. And the rulers of Nusaria step back. And they watch, and Angron, they all go up to the hills, and they just go, all right, we'll just do a war of attrition here. And they keep sending warriors and fighters after them, and over time, just to whittle them down. And it's within like a couple of years, Angron's forces have gone from close to 2,000 that he'd escaped with to less than 1,000.
Yeah, but he's also in a barren rock. They don't have enough food. This is just such a bad idea.
It's a terrible idea. But this is where everything turns for the worst. And where it all turns for the worst is a fleet arrives in orbit that no one, I guess, on the planet can see. It's the Emperor. And the Emperor was drawn there by Grunt's psychic powers, like he can with all of his sons. And he looks down at the situation, and he's joyed to see that Angron stood up to tyranny and freed his brothers from slavery. Yeah. There's a lot of irony in that statement, by the way. Oh, wow. So he and some custodes teleport down to the surface to talk to him, and he congratulates Angron, all he's accomplished. He informs him that he's now earned his place to lead one of the Emperor's legions. And come with me. And Angron looks at him, looks at the custode, and says, no, and walks away.
Well, he tells him that this is awesome, his place. He's not going to abandon his men. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm saying he's just a badass thing. By the way, the Emperor could have solved this in 1.8 seconds.
Oh, yeah. The Emperor, but I do want to point out, this is a key thing about Angron's power. The Emperor emanates psychic energy. When you meet the Emperor, it makes you want to please him. It also makes you see him however, whatever way is the most beneficial for him. Angron looked at him and went, yeah, no, I'm not doing any of that crap, and walked away. And that is a little bit, this should have been a nice warning sign to the Emperor of maybe this guy's got some issues. The Emperor then and his custodes leave. He gets back up on his ship and he looks down and he realizes Angron's about to die. The Nusarians
Yeah, they brought everybody. They brought the kitchen sink. They surround his forces. And yeah, the Emperor could have went, flick, I've conquered Nisaria, but...
Let's go through it. So the Emperor here is faced with three choices. Choice one, abandon Angron to die. Probably would have been the better choice. Option two, use his massively superior force to invade Nisaria, kill all those leaders, uplift the population, and bring a world into imperial compliance. Or option C...
Wait, let's do it at the end. Probably get a wildly loyal now Angron as one of your leaders of the legions.
And an amazing recruiting world for space marines.
Yes.
Or there's option C, dick move.
Wow. Also, can't believe that this guy wasn't super loyal to me after this.
And I want to point out, again, this planet was technologically advanced, but not that advanced. And the Emperor had custodes with him and himself. He could have conquered this thing in like an hour and a half while talking on the phone.
Yeah, I was going to say, while he's also ordering out, trying to figure out, you guys want a Korean barbecue? Are we going to get Mexican? Yeah.
This would have been nothing thing. Instead, here's a good TV reference. He quantum leaps Angron.
Oh, God.
Yeah. As Angron and his forces are rushing down to engage with the Nusarians, the Emperor teleports him out into the hold of his own ship. Angron, by the way, from that hold, watches as all of his brethren get slaughtered. Because without Angron there to lead them, it doesn't go well. Angron then turns. He's surrounded by custodes. And
does
attacks
not give
the custodes.
Any shits about that, though.
He kills a custode in this process. By the way, he was barehanded. The custodes had spears, and he killed one with his bare hands. At which point, the Emperor just knocks him out psychically. Angron awakens and starts screaming at the Emperor, why? Why would you do this? You could have saved all of us. Why this? And the Emperor says, quote, you lack vision.
And he tells him, basically, we're not about small squabbles in this. And he's, with time, you will understand what I did. It does not work out that way. I'm pretty sure if you go to Angron right now, he's absolutely not.
Yeah. Angron is furious. And so the Emperor just kind of goes, yeah, angry guy, go over there. And they send him over to the 12th Legion and just shove him in the hold of one of their main ships. Because he just basically tells those guys to go F themselves. And he sits there by himself.
But he also, the Emperor bails and tells the Legion, hey, man, convince him to run the Legion.
Yeah.
But you can't attack him.
Yeah. What? And so what happens next is they start sending captains down there to talk to him. The first one is the one I feel the most bad for. Because he probably went in there like, awesome, I'm going to go tell this guy. We have our Primarch now. I'm going to explain to him how great we are. We are this incredible legion. Here are the worlds we've conquered. He didn't get through the H of hello before Angron pulled his arms off of it.
Angron just took him like the juggernaut on.
Deadpool 2, yeah. So the second guy goes in there, and it's the same thing. So they get through this. Eventually, seven legionnaires, captains, enter, and Angron beats them all to death until the eighth one goes in. And before we jump into the eighth one, backstory time. For those of you who are newer to the game, having a Primarch be part of the tabletop was crazy. It was 2017 when we got our first Primarch.
We never thought we would get one on the table because they were wildly OP.
Ever.
There was no way.
Yes, they did technically exist in second edition, but if you listen to a history of 40K, you'll realize the second edition is a little bit goofy. It went away pretty quick. So for six editions, all of the major factions were led by a key, I would call mortal character. Typhus, Khalgar, Ahriman, Abaddon, Torgadon, all those types of people. That's who would be the most powerful and most influential part of your legion. For the World Eaters, this was Karn. And Karn is going to come up now.
Not going to give his full name there?
No, because I cannot pronounce that full name. There are limits.
I'm talking about his moniker. Karn the Betrayer.
He's not Karn the Betrayer.
That is true. Right now, he's not. I'm just saying, but you're talking about names, though. Yeah.
Which, by the way, spoiler alert, guys, this is going to be a three-part cast on World Eaters. The third one, we're going to do a lot of Karn. He's important now. He comes a little bit less important, and then he becomes really important for the Legion. So Karn is born on Terra. He's one of the first members of the 12th Legion. In fact, as a neophyte, it was pretty obvious. Hey, this guy can fight. He was so savage that people were me like, yeah, this one's going to be really good. But a couple key foreshadowing events happened to Karn during his neophyte phase, also known as Scout, also known as Brad's sacrifice to the enemy.
They get his, which you always love, his mentor.
Yeah.
Gruner, but the best part about him is they went, hey, everybody's not doing enough, and you should help them by beating the crap out of them mercilessly. That's how you get better. Yeah.
Gruner, this is why I say the 12th Legion were evil from the start. Gruner is helping train Karn to be this incredible leader. And they bond as friends, barely as mentors. He's bonded as well with Gruner as you could for Gruner being a murdering psychopath. And Karn also a murdering psychopath. Like, Gruner wasn't baking him cookies and bringing them to him. They were just like, hey, I'm going to turn you into the greatest murderer ever. The important thing that Gruner does for Karn, though, is the traditions of the War Dogs, the 12th Legion. He talks about something called the Contest. And at this point, by the way, this Legion is 3 years old.
I was just about to say, you go tradition. This is, hey, man, we occasionally do stuff.
Yeah, we've got a tradition in our three-year-old Legion. It's really important. It goes back really far. Like, really? But anyway, it sounds cool when you call it a tradition. So the Contest is literally a contest. And all it says is, for whoever can accumulate 1,000 skulls wins. That's it. So Karn asks two questions. First off, what do I get if I win? To which Gruner shrugs his shoulders and says, I don't know. No one's ever won. Spoiler alert, Karn's going to win this later. Question number two is, where do I get the skulls? To which Gruner and the other Space Marines begin laughing, because it's implied. It's from the conquest and killing. We're not going to give you the skulls. I'm going to make it easy. You have to go find them, because the skull throne doesn't build itself off donations. You have to go and get them.
Yeah. And the people that you're getting them from are fairly unwilling to give.
Yeah, they're big fans of their current skull and don't want to hand it over. So it's not long in before Karn elevates himself to a layer of command in the 12th Legion. He's more savage and ruthless than really anybody else. Karn and Typhus have a lot in common. They are both real examples of what this Legion's going to become. And Karn he's also tough as all hell. That's probably his superpower at this point. The term I like to use him is, he's stubborn, but not stubborn like he's rude. I mean, he was that as well, but it's more, he's just too stubborn to die.
It's
no more, matter what you do to him.
I didn't hear no bell.
Karn has a lot of actually similarities to a lot of the Primarchs in the sense of, you put massive adversity in front of him, he doesn't care. He just keeps going, because with anger and hate. So this all comes to fruition because Karn is, of course, the 8th, important number, person to walk in to confront Angron. And as we said before, the Emperor told them, you're not allowed to hit Angron. No stabbing Angron. If you have to convince him with your words, which is just, again, thanks, galaxy's most powerful psyker. None of us have that power. So Angron has been butchering everyone. Karn walks in the room and Angron attacks. And Karn just keeps taking this beating and this beating and this beating.
But he's telling him the entire time about the achievements of the Legion and why Angron should be proud to be the leader of their Legion. And he's beating Karn to death, and he should be dead, actually. Karn.
Yeah, when we talk about, he's telling Angron about it, he's basically, as he's catching his breath from horrifying assaults, is expunging all of the success of the Legion. But what ends up moving Angron over, though, and what kind of halts Angron's assault, is that at no point does Karn beg for mercy. Karn takes this beating and this beating, and he never once asks for mercy. He never pleads. And Angron looks at Karn and realizes, this actually is a warrior I'm talking to here. Because, you know, the other ones were cowards. Because that was Angron's biggest thing, is he's given this Legion. And don't forget, he was in the middle of a battle. And the Emperor, rather than fight, took him and took the easy way out. So he assumes that's how all of the Imperium functions. They're cowards. He would have fought. But now here's Karn, who just is taking this beating from him. No matter what he does to him, Karn continues. And so Angron says, all right, tell me more. And Angron lets Karn explain to him all the histories of the Legion, all the accomplishments they have. And he goes, okay, you've got something I can work with here. You're not there yet, but you got something I can work with there.
You got Moxie, kid, and I'm going to deal with it.
Now, what's fun about this is that Angron comes out, still hates the whole Legion, but basically says, I like this one guy. It's the scene from Half-Baked. I'm not going to quote it, but there we go. But that's Karn. And he decides to promote Karn to be his equerry, E-Q-U-E-R-R-Y. Equerry? Let me go with equerry. All right. An equerry is the personal confidant of a Primarch. It's the highest title within a Legion. But there's a little bit of an issue with Karn getting that title. And the issue.
Hold on. Yeah. I'm jumping all over this because you just said it's personal confidant. No, the biggest thing that he's supposed to do is stay the hand of the leader when it's appropriate.
Yeah.
You chose Karn as that guy who would not stay your hand. If you were thinking about not killing someone, he would call you out and probably kill that person for
you. Well, that's what I say. He would stay your hand. He's supposed to be the voice of reason.
Yeah, sure.
Fun story. I mean, I guess technically Karn might be more of a voice of reason than Angron. Actually, no, not at this stage. At current stage 40K, Karn might be. And we are really, this is a complicated debate right there. Yeah, Angron makes his second in charge, mini Angron, which is great. They're both susceptible to fits of rage, both like killing everybody. Yeah, in some ways, pretty good setup.
They also hate everyone, including themselves.
Yeah, themselves, their own Legion, and we're going to talk about everything the other Legions later. So Angron now takes over the Legion, begins to shape him. And he does a couple things that I just find kind of funny. First off, the other Primarchs, by the way, did get to meet him. There's that little nice little meet and greet moment. And overall consensus, we don't like Angron. And fun story, feeling with Mutual. And by the way, also, got worse when they saw him in combat.
It didn't really help that Angron would tell them how much he did not like them upon meeting them.
Interesting thing, Angron, too, I should have mentioned this before, Karn was not the head of the Legion. In fact, since the 12th Legion had left Terra, they'd had a chapter master. And every other Legion had this. There was some chapter master, they meet the Primarch, and they would cede control to the Primarch. The 12th Legion was led by a guy named Ibram Greer, who just disappears.
Yep.
No time. He disappeared, by the way, like before this whole thing Angron was on. He just stopped existing randomly. Just weird side note. Did Angron murder him? Did Karn murder him? No one knows. Did the Emperor
throw him on an airlock? Yeah. Who knows?
But he just disappeared. But Angron now takes full control of his Legion and just decides they're going to be the ultimate conquerors. Not the silly Rogel Dorn conquerors, by the way. We're like, we're going to go to a planet and we're going to conquer it and we're going to fortify it. No. Angron's Legion would set upon anyone who resisted compliance and just remove them, that stain that they are, from history. Everything, that any world they would go to, they would destroy and consume. Other Primarchs, by the way, didn't love this system. Angron did goofy stuff. Like, he comes in there, he saw the training pits they had and discovered that they were using like less than lethal rounds. Nope. Make sure every sword is sharp. Angron starts to taking his Legion and turns them into pit fighters who aren't fighting in pits. Oops. Yeah, it's recorded at this era that every single world, I guess they were called the World Eaters, but every single World Eater was covered in scars. And it's from other World Eater fighting. But can't argue with the results. They are faster, more violent. They could pull Imperial compliance better than anyone. As Angron is building up this Legion and making them better fighters, he does it in multiple facets. Facet one was, I'm just going to make you guys train with live ammunition. Terrible idea. That's what we're going to do. I'm also going to basically triple up your level of combat. We are going to be the best fighters. But the biggest one he added was, you are going to succeed or else. And he brings in decimation, which, by the way, I'm doing this from memory, but I think Petarabo also did that, if I'm not mistaken. And I could have sworn.
Different way. was actually taking out like whole companies if they failed.
But it was that's like it's those two are the ones who are a little bit messed up in this one. But yeah, so Angron's thing with and it was true decimation. If you failed to achieve the goals Angron set forth from you, then 10 of you, one of you got to die by the other 9 beating you to death. And that was something that he expected. And that was it. Was not overly popular, by the way. The men, not huge fans of this method. This then gets worse because Angron really was just a crazy person. He decides that they should be able to pacify worlds in under 1 Nusirian day, which is 31 hours. If they can't do that, then decimation. That becomes multiple worlds they're doing this on. And sometimes they achieve it. Most oftentimes they did not.
This we're talking worlds and systems now, not just a skirmish.
Yeah, not a city. 31 hours, space marines. If the city's not space marines, totally doable. But scouring a planet in 31 hours. Where this all comes to a head is a world called Genna, G-H-E-N-N-A. So I'm pronouncing it Genna. Genna is a fringe world that had barely survived the Dark Age of technology. Warp just ravaged it. And so the population actually were living in life-supporting pods. But using the variation of like abominable intelligence and mind control, they built synths. And these synths were actually running the planet. The world leaders are sent to pacify it. Angron puts down his 31-hour time limit and says, go. The world leaders deploy and they discover a problem. There are so many synths here. It's not that the synths can fight. There's just too many. They actually cannot chop through them. There's not enough time to do it. And the timer runs out and they go back to the ship to face judgment. And there's a centurion here named Magos who's going to be important for about the next 5-6 minutes of this cast.
I was just about to say.
Magos is a centurion and he comes in front of Angron and they have a back and forth. And Angron tells him, you failed. I expect you to decimate. And Magos says, no, I'm not doing that. And Angron screams him not only are you doing it, you're going to pick the first one who dies. To which Magos again says, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. Angron out of nowhere explodes with rage and begins like just trashing the room. And he starts killing other world eaters who are in the room.
Anybody within reach.
Interestingly, know who was within reach? Magos. You know who didn't get killed? Magos. They don't explain how that happened, by the way. He was the closest one to Angron when he flew into this rage, and he was fine.
And also, everybody else died.
As this is going, though, the librarians, this is going to come up a couple times, use their psychic powers to knock Angron unconscious. Like, hard unconscious, too. Not a little, hey, why don't you take a nap? He's all the way out. Now we're going to back up the story a little bit, because this is all coming to fruition at the same time. Angron felt that his warriors were too weak. And the way he wanted to solve it was to take the butcher's nails that are in his head and put them in his legion. Because, you know, what worked once would work over and over again. Yeah. And there's an apothecary there named Sirlock. Sirlock is an apothecary for the world leaders, so we're not starting off well. He's also a disciple and close friends of Fabius Bile. We're not doing great here. Sirlock sees this idea of butcher's nails and goes, great idea. I love this.
Genius.
Yeah. The only problem is that every time they tried to put them in people, they died.
They died horribly.
He's experimenting more and lots of legionnaires are dying. Eventually, word gets back to all the rest of the Legion that Angron's planning on this. And Magos, the guy who just told Angron to go screw himself, and this has been before this moment, and some other centurions like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. Fast forward, while Angron's asleep, they discover that Sirlock has mastered it and is ready to actually, and they start implanting everyone else. So they go marching down there to stop him. And as they march down there, they run into Karn. And explain to Karn, Sirlock is going to start putting these butcher's nails in everyone's head. We have to stop him. Are you with us? And Karn kind of looked at them. And by the way, why did you ask Karn this? And just says, no, and wanders away. Why did he wander away? Because Karn was on his way down to go see Sirlak to have said butcher's nails shoved in his head. Yeah, yeah. They were talking to patient zero. And
Everybody died until Karn.
Until Karn.
Karn basically was so angry that he's ain't going out like that again. Ain't to hear no bell. It just popped up and was like, I used to be mad. That was not mad. Now I'm mad.
Thanks to Karn, Sirlak now knows where to put these butcher's nails within someone's head. I assume, by the way, at this point, Magos and the crew had gone to a different ship, because what happens next is Sirlak starts implanting hundreds, I think to the point of thousands of legionnaires with these butcher's nails. Boom, 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 boom. But around this time, Angron wakes up. And he does not wake up happy, I might add. Angron wakes up and Karn is waiting for him. And when he wakes up, Karn has the butcher's nails, which are very easy to see. And Karn basically says, good news. Points at his head. Look what I got. And by the way, so do a few thousand other people. I think we should go back down to Genna. And at that point, we're going to break. And we're going to break because in the next cast, we're going to focus on more of this HR crisis that is Angron. I'm just saying, as a manager, I've sat through a lot of HR trainings. They've never explicitly said I'm not allowed to put psychoactive nails in the skulls of my employees, but it was implied. It was definitely implied that was a no.
Also, this gets some pretty negative feedback from the rest of the Imperium.
Yes. So next week, we're going to dive into that and really the ultimate fall of Angron. So hope you guys like this so far. Doing a lot more of it next week. This has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
I'll see you guys next week.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.